The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock. Click on the Donate Now button in the upper right corner of our webpage.
Inevitably, all of us will ask God this one important question.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do? Why am I here? What do you want me to do? Why am I here?
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This is God calling.
Then everything can seem so clear. AM 1260 The Rock presents God Calling. This locally produced program looks closer at stories of religious vocations from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. And now here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Hello and welcome again. This is Paul Orlowski. Today on God Calling, we're with Monsignor Richard Antel. Now, Monsignor Antel is now at Holy Name here in Cleveland, but for many years, 20, I believe, was in El Salvador at the Diocesan Mission in El Salvador, a unique and also a very well-published and often published author. So we've got a lot of things to talk about today. Father, first of all, welcome to God Calling.
Thank you very much.
What called you? How did God speak to you? Was it as a young child or...
Well, I remember as a little kid at my first communion, I was thinking about being a priest. Then it kind of tapered off for me. But in high school, at senior year, I was already admitted to some colleges. And then we didn't have PSR, we had CCD. And I was at Mid Park High School. My parish was St. John Bosco. So the pastor took all the seniors in high school in PSR. It was amazing, you know, like on Sunday morning, he would give us a class all the time. And he was so interesting. He was a very well-read man. He was quite a character, too. He had a former chaplain in the Navy. He was kind of rough sometimes in language-wise and stuff. He even had the mass schedule was like, 800 hours or you know, like that kind of
old
stuff.
Old school.
Yeah. He was so fascinating that I started thinking about it. And then I read a book about St. Ignatius Loyola. So I went to talk to him about it. And So I said, you know, I think I'd like to be a priest. I think I'd like to be a Jesuit. He said, no, you don't want to be a Jesuit. He says, you don't want to be a high school teacher. You want to be a pastor.
Okay.
And so then he pushed it ahead, and then I ended up at Borromeo. So
Before that, tell me about your parents and your upbringing.
Well, I was from the east side. In fact, I lived about a mile away from where I live now because Holy Name Parish is right near my old neighborhood. And my father was Lutheran. He converted actually when I was in the seminary. And my mother was Irish Catholic of St. Catherine Parish on the east side. In fact, I went to the same parish, was baptized in the same parish as she was and everything. I remember it as far as my father's conversion. As a kid, I was constantly praying for it. By the time I was in the seminary, I thought, well, he is what he is. Then they said, guess what? He's going to be a Catholic this Easter. So it was really an amazing story, you know, that delayed reaction.
God answers, but in his own time.
Right, right. It was my prayers worked, but they didn't seem to work right away. But so then I grew up there and the east side. Then we moved out of the neighborhood in 1970. So then I went from 2 years at Holy Name High School, which was then on Broadway where I'm at right now.
Right.
And then I went to Mid Park. Well, it was like a whole different world because from a high school that had about 500 students, I went to one that had 2,000. And my graduating class had 615 at Mid Park, you know, more than the whole school did at Holy Name. That was also helped me about my faith because it was so obvious that not everybody was Catholic. And I'd been in an environment where everybody was Catholic. My friends would always say, well, what did the Catholic Church say? What does that they say about that? And I was like the expert because I had gone to 10 years of Catholic school. And so that helped my consciousness, really. I think it really caused a kind of a more identification with the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. I had many of the same experiences from the standpoint. Everybody on our street was Catholic, and very few were not. I don't think I ever knew anybody that had divorced parents.
Really?
Sure. Back then, you know, but then I went to public high school and it was a whole different animal. It's like, whoa, okay, not everybody goes to Mass, and not everybody does this or that.
Right, a whole different story about where their background is and where they're coming from and things. It was instructive for me. It was good. It was not easy, though.
Yeah. The seminary, it's a tough go.
Yeah. That was the other thing Father Tully, the pastor, said about the seminary. Because I don't know what I had said to him about not sure if I was going to go on or whatever. Mm-hmm. He said, hey, listen, just do what my pastor told me to do. He said, at one point I told him, I think I'm going to leave the seminary. He said, listen, those guys there know better than you do. If they tell you to leave, you're supposed to leave. if they don't tell you that, don't leave.
Uh-huh.
So he says, there, I made it.
You did? You did. Where were you assigned at first?
I went to St. Francis de Sales in Parma.
Okay. Big parish.
It was at that time. It was a big parish. We had four priests there.
Wow.
So imagine that. Big different today. Story, yeah.
Yeah. Other local?
All diocesan, right. Yeah.
Here?
In fact, the Father Balo, who was the pastor, had been my...
Oh, okay.
So it was going back into back to the future kind of thing, yeah.
Those Latin conjugations.
He trained us so that I could still say them. I mean, you know, like I just do the endings of the third declension and all that stuff.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And I can't. Other local parishes before you went abroad?
No, then after St. Francis, I went to the mission.
Okay.
I went to Cochabamba, Bolivia, which... They had a language school and mission preparation run by Marino. It's no longer there. So I was there for 4 months. One of my classmates preceded me, and he said, whatever you do, don't go and live in one of the houses with the Bolivian people because everybody gets sick. So when I got to the mission, they said, what do you want? Do you want to go to a home with the family eventually, or do you want to stay at the mission site? You know. So I said, well, I better stay at the mission site. They said, there's no room right now. I immediately went to another family.
Naturally.
But it was much better because language-wise, they didn't speak English, so I had to defend myself in Spanish. So it helped me, made me really study my Spanish a lot quicker.
How were you chosen for that? Did you volunteer for it?
It was volunteer. Yeah, in fact, one of my uncles, you know, I said my father was a Lutheran. One of my Lutheran uncles says, what exactly happened? I mean, did you get in trouble or something? I said, no, it's a volunteer job.
A number of people volunteer for it and they choose or you
know. Well, at my time, I waited. Well, there's one priest ahead of me, and mm-hmm. then he went, and because of an even unusual kind of circumstance, he went 6 months before me. But like now, unfortunately, there's not a waiting list. So, mm-hmm. you know, if anybody's listening who would like to go and is a priest, they're looking for somebody.
Yeah, okay. It was a little rough over there at that time. We're going to talk about that when we come back, right here on God Calling. Stay tuned. Monsignor Richard Antel is joining us on God Calling today. I am Paul Orlowski, and Monsignor, we were just talking about you arriving at the mission in El Salvador. What was the genesis of the Cleveland connection to El Salvador? How did that all begin?
Pope John the 22nd, St. John the 23rd, I'm sorry, he asked the Diocese of North America to help the Diocese of Central and South America because we were so rich in vocations and they were very poor. And so he arranged that they would start an exchange of personnel. Archbishop Whalen, who later went to Hartford, Connecticut, he was tasked by Archbishop Hoban to find out where they would have it. And so apparently took a map out and he was looking at statistics and he saw that there was a parish, there was a diocese in El Salvador that was very priest poor, and then he thought that was close enough to Cleveland and it worked out, and so apparently the numbers worked out for him and he decided that we'd go to the San Miguel diocese, it's in the St. Michael in El Salvador, and then eventually they moved from San Miguel to San Salvador diocese also.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like a trajectory, but they had at first a big team that went down there. There were several priests and lots of nuns too that went down. And then they had lay missionaries also.
Yeah. Now when you got there, it was just a couple of years after the murders of Dorothy Cazel and Gene Donovan.
Well, I got there in 86, which was
okay, six years.
Yeah.
And the bishop had been assassinated even before the nuns were...
Right, in the same 1980, right.
Okay.
That was the year that I was ordained, in fact. I was still a deacon when Bishop Romero was, you know, Saint Romero mm-hmm. was assassinated. And then some months later, like 6 months later is when the nuns were.
Was the tension palpable still in the air when you arrived there?
When I was there, there was still a war going on, but it wasn't really in the area that we were there. It wasn't so tense. I mean, you would see a lot of soldiers everywhere, mm-hmm. and there'd be people with machine guns. And I said that I was so surprised. I went to the Capitol because we had to get our papers and everything in order. And we went to the McDonald's. There was a guy with a machine gun outside the McDonald's. I was teasing this other missionary. I said to her, "Don't you feel safe?"
Yeah, I could relate to that. Yeah, I'm kind of afraid of guns. Thankful, I think.
Well, we were fortunate not to have much activity like that around us. We had one famous attack in La Libertad, where I was for a while. They had some kind of they're proving a point from the guerrillas to the naval people in La Libertad, and it was a shootout at night. It was like something out of the movies, really. Mm-hmm. And it was really very strange kind of circumstance, because I was watching on TV the killing fields, you know, the story about right. Cambodia.
Yes.
And then it was just a gruesome movie. It's just so terrible about the war there in Cambodia. And then I turned it off and I went to bed, and the other priest did too. So then when it was about midnight, it was like all heck broke loose, you know, mm-hmm. shooting and everything else. And then I remember I got dressed immediately, and the other priest came crawling over. He was it was always so hot in El Salvador, so he's still in his underwear, and he comes over crawling on the off course.
Stay low.
And he sees me. He says, "Oh, that's a good idea. I better get dressed." So he crawled back into his room and he got dressed. And then we were waiting, and then I said, "Isn't that strange? They usually knock out the lights before they're fighting like this, you know?" Boom, out the went the lights.
Wow.
I said, "Well, they're listening to me, or what's going on?" But that was the toughest experience. So I was praying the rosary there, and I was saying it aloud. And the other priest said, "I'm glad you were saying the rosary, because I couldn't follow it. But I figure it's for two." I told the Lord, "Do it for two."
So, double size.
Yeah.
I read some things that you wrote about communion, Holy Communion in the United States, and the differences between almost everybody goes to communion today.
Right.
And it's different in El Salvador, they're properly disposed and
they're
respected.
A lot more respectful about it. They're a lot more aware that maybe I shouldn't be going today. You know, they'd rather go to confession. They all go to confession a lot. In fact, that was one of the ways I teased the people at Holy Name. When I first got there, I said, "You know, I've never been in such a saintly parish." I said, "Because nobody goes to confession." I said, "If it was like one of those, you know, bakery where they take a number," I said, "it'd be number one."
You know, number one again.
But so it was just like they would often, well, they still do that. They hear it on Sunday during Mass. The other priest usually hears confessions, and mm-hmm. people go. And they're more aware of it, I think. And then even within ethnic parishes here, especially Hispanic ones, it's more common to have a confessional thing, and not that everybody just marches up to communion. They have to think about it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Dan Dealey, our production director, has heard me tell this story before. I don't know exactly how my mother would ever – if you didn't go, it meant you weren't properly disposed. Mm-hmm. And your mother would get up and walk by it and give you the look.
Oh, huh?
You know the look? Like, well, what's with you, mister? Yeah. So that'd be Sunday. And I don't know how she would ever remember, but the next Saturday afternoon, you, mister – get down to confession.
Oh, so, well,
she's got a house of seven people, and but she could remember that. God bless her.
We were usually sent to confession, but it wasn't because of that. But there was a lot more vigilance then about that mm-hmm. kind of stuff.
You had a lot of different jobs in El Salvador, including being the administrator of the Curia.
They call it moderator, right?
All right.
I fell into these jobs because when I came back from Salvador the first time, because I was there two times. So after 8 years, I was back in Cleveland. And then while I was in the mission, I started writing stories for Our Sunday Visitor. Mm-hmm. And so then they had an occasion where they wanted me to do an interview with Archbishop Sines, who had just been named Archbishop of El Salvador. And he was in Indiana, and they thought that would be good to have. So I ended up having an interview with him, and he remembered me from El Salvador, mm-hmm. which is odd because he wasn't in my diocese where I worked, but he had met me at some event or something like that. And then when he heard I was back in El Salvador, he thought, well, I'd like you to do my English correspondence for me. So I was actually in another diocese, but he arranged that one day a week I'd come over to his office and do mm-hmm. his English correspondence, which I ended up doing a lot of things for the rebuilding the cathedral, remodeling it, and finishing it because it had been really damaged in one of the earthquakes. So I like wrote all the bishops. I also did fundraising and things like that. Mm-hmm. Well, then because of the Cleveland team logistics, I was transferred into the diocese again, into San Salvador. And so I was working there a lot. And then he decided that I would work on Caritas. Caritas is like Catholic Charities, mm-hmm. except that it was because of a disaster that there was a Belgian priest who was in charge of it. And he was fooled by this group of people that included two businessmen from America and a Guatemalan guy who had been a consul of Guatemala in Miami, and he invested $1 million with them.
Oh, dear.
Which was just totally lost.
Taken from out of the mouths of the poor.
Yeah, it was, and because it was earthquake aid that had come in at the time, the Archbishop had asked me to start an English mass because the ambassador from the United States was an American Catholic, mm-hmm. and so she wanted a mass in English. So that was like another thing he just threw at me.
Yeah. They keep piling the jabs on. Can I stop you right there, Father? Sure. We're going to take a commercial break and be right back on God Calling. This is God Calling. Monsignor Richard Antel is our guest from Holy Name Parish here in Cleveland. Spent many years in El Salvador at the diocesan mission there. When you left, Monsignor, noble friend of El Salvador. That's quite an honor. That came from the government, I believe.
Right. The assembly, the National Assembly voted on it. And especially that was because Caritas had some work with AIDS when I was there. Mm-hmm. And I had mentioned the last segment about how I got to be the head of Caritas was because yes. they had this disaster. And one of the things was that the American ambassador was at Mass one Sunday in English. And then we had just had this robbery, and then we wanted an investigation into it and so forth. And they're not like the sharpest kind of people for those kind of international issues and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So as I walked out in the procession of Mass, I turned to her and I said, could I see you after Mass? And then I did. And then she gave us a FBI investigation.
Oh, wonderful.
So she gave us all this information that later on served to, in part. We got some of the money back. We mm-hmm. only got one-fourth of it back. But then it was very complicated. Because of that work, then the bishop said, I'll be in charge of Caritas.
Okay.
And then something else happened in the diocese with some plan that didn't go by. So he said, well, while you're here, why don't you also be the moderator of the Curia? So then I ended up with that. And then I also had a parish.
Oh, that on top of that. Okay. Yeah. You're a prolific writer. Where do you get your ideas for your books?
Mostly from my reading, I guess. I don't know. Things come to me, just mm-hmm. like I do different articles. And like you mentioned about the article about the Eucharist. Because of the experience, I think, of comparisons that people wouldn't naturally know about. So I figure that I'll share that a little bit.
Yeah. The one I got to me, and I have your new one as well, but the wedding, a lot of twists and turns in the day-old life of a parish priest.
Right, only one day. And so I was trying to use the unities, you know, Aristotle, about play should happen in one day, in one place. And so it's like 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on some things that happened to either myself or my classmates. And really, the title is kind of unusual because it's the wedding that never happened, actually.
I read the liner notes. I haven't finished, so it says it has a surprise ending, so don't tell me.
Yeah, don't want to be spoiler alert. Yeah.
Spoiler alert, exactly. The Christmas Files is the new one, and this is really very, very interesting from the standpoint of Christmas through the eyes of Satan.
Right. It's sort of based on, you ever hear of C.S. Lewis' Screwtape Letters? In which he has a devil writing to his nephew about how to capture a soul. It's a classic book,
right.
And very, very interesting. But this, I thought, with WikiLeaks and all these leaks of different government things, what if somebody had sold their soul to the devil through the internet and then came across the special files of the devils about mm-hmm. when Jesus was born? And so that's what this is, you know. So they're like the chapters are different documents that he found. And it's I have it set up like an Irish priest. He was the one that received it because the man came to him for confession before he died. And then he was able to get all this information. And so that's why I call it the Xmas files, you know, because people call it Christmas Xmas. Mm-hmm. But they, like the devil, doesn't even want to use the word Christ, you know. It's different. It's just kind of a science fiction take. Some people think it's like science fiction, but it's a lot of scripture, a lot of basis of scripture.
But I can tell you had fun writing it, because even when you mention the title, you get a smile on your face.
Well, I'm trying to explain it to people. Some people think it's a little hard to understand, but it's a very unique kind of thing. But I like the idea of it because, first of all this interest in the occult and everything else, and then the internet and all that, and then all these ideas about like what would the devil react to this thing, you know?
You mentioned another article that I read that basically the church has no borders. In these days and times, sometimes I think we tend to be a little closed, particularly in this country maybe, and not the church is not, but Americans in general, and the church can break through that.
Sure. Faith is transcendent, right? And it's more important than any kind of nation or national boundary or whatever. I think that one of the famous things about doctors is Doctors Without Frontiers, you know, the
I do.
They have a international kind of thing. So that you work wherever. So the church doesn't really know those kinds of boundaries and has never known. I mean, like, look at how many immigrant priests served in Cleveland. We were really dependent on immigrant clergy for a long time. The neighborhood where I'm at right now, a lot of times they had Polish priests for years and years, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that idea that we would have a clergy from other places, it wasn't a big surprise for me to go down to be in El Salvador, because there were other, like there were Irish priests there, and there were Polish priests too in El Salvador. Even during the communist regime in Poland, Poland exported priests, and some of them were really tremendous workers, amazing people.
I know El Salvador is still very close to your heart. If somebody would like to help the mission in El Salvador, can they do that?
Oh, sure. I think it would be best directly with the mission office, you know.
Right here in Cleveland, there's an office.
Right. Father Valenga is in charge of it. In fact, right now he's down in El Salvador.
Father Monsignor Richard Antel, sorry about that, our guest today on God Calling. We'll be back next week at the same time. Please join us.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do? Why am I here?
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This is God Calling.
Thank you for listening to God Calling here on AM 1260 The Rock. This locally produced program is dedicated to looking closer at religious vocations, from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. Join us next week for another episode, and if you missed any part of this week's program, visit our website at am1260therock.com and click on the archive audio tab.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock. Click on the Donate Now button in the upper right corner of the webpage.